Shisara Kona Kumara. Welcome to Satsang. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine. Well, good evening, everybody. This is Shisara Kona Kumara. You're listening to Satsang tonight, and we are so, so very happy to have you with us again. We're going to go ahead and get started. Take a nice deep breath, and I will clear the space. You know what? Take an extra nice deep breath. Mother, Father, God that I am, through the great Central Sun Hierarchy, through the Office of the Christ, through the Order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles, not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, Keeper of the Violet Flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring, pass not, and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth the shaft of pure Christ light, one shaft to surround each one of us, and I ask that they be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity. I place myself in service to all of those listening tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. All right, come on back to me. I was doing like this balancing act with my singing bowl while I was holding it. I'm like in this, the alien stuck me in a different position tonight. And I'm in this like contorted position trying to hold that bowl up in front of the mic. And it was a challenge, but I'm up for the challenge. So very good. Wonderful. So tonight we've got PLN and Linda with us here in our Charlotte office and happy to speak with you as always. There's always a lot to do. So let's see, challenging times, definitely. Solar eclipse on Tuesday, setting things up for the next 6 months, and lots of falling away, lots of things dissolving away, deteriorating away, things kind of being demolished and cut to pieces, right? Which is always a good thing in my book, right? Y'all want to dissolve the personal self. What better way? And, you know, what a gift that the universe kind of brings it to your door. Yeah. Right, Linda? She's like, yeah, great gift. Okay. So tonight, let's talk about, what should we talk about? We can talk about purification. It's good. It's a good thing. It's in a roundabout way. It's basically what I was talking to everybody at Satsang here in Charlotte earlier about. But I never said the word purification, and it's really cool. When we were in meditation, we go into meditation at the end of Satsang, and then we come out, and within a few minutes, I'm on the air with you. So I'm still kind of carrying that energy. And the really cool thing tonight was when we were in meditation, I got this beautiful visual in my inner sight. And it was actually me on a higher dimensional level, but I had this thing that kind of came in, this thought form that looked like purification by fire. And I watched, it was so cool. I watched, you know, quote unquote, me walk through this wall of white fire. And I watched it as if I was standing back, kind of in line with the wall of fire. So I watched her kind of walk in and through, and then watched her come through the other side. And what I was witnessing was that, this being kind of goes into the fire, and in the movement out of it came this almost explosion of light that was very scintillating and pure white, you know, like the brightest spotlight you could imagine. But within the light, I saw her, and I saw her in her truer form move through it in this beautiful space of grace and joy. And it was really something to see from where I was viewing it from. And because it wasn't like I was just looking at me, it was more of a kind of metaphorical for humanity in general, you know, that there's this thing that occurs with dissolution work on the level that you're capable of doing it, that, it's there to burn off the dross of just lifetimes of accumulation of identification. Lots of big words there. Let me see if I can. So lifetime after lifetime after lifetime, the consciousness that is you has repeatedly become identified with all of the stories that comprised that person in any given time. And it gets carried from one lifetime into the next, into the next, into the next. And each lifetime brings its own opportunities for greater growth in the balancing of karmic debt that's sitting there, that has been built up lifetime after lifetime. You know, good deeds being balanced by harmful acts or unwarranted taking from life itself, and other people as part of that, of course. So you have the opportunity in every lifetime to kind of balance what got more disqualified the last time. And it's always brought to you in its very perfect form, brought to you as the boss you hate and the next door neighbor's dog that doesn't stop barking and all of these little things that are so bothersome about life in general. And of course, every single one of those is your gift and a piece of the puzzle to your awakening. If you want to take the time and put in the effort to pay attention and to apply understandings that you come into to those things. So we have the opportunity to purify ourselves more and more every day, you know. And the question is, are you taking advantage of it? You know, because universal law stipulates that there is no standing still. There is no stagnation. You're either moving forward or you're moving backward. There is no, you know, just be in this spot and stay there. It just does not work that way. So when it comes to your spiritual work, which of course is your entire life, when it comes to that, you're either moving forward or you're moving backward, right? So you can look at, you know, yourself as kind of the ocean coming in waves, you know, that you'll have be the wave that comes in And then it pulls back out again, and it comes in again, and it pulls back out again. And, you know, the question is, in where you're functioning from in your life, how much of your time are you spending coming in versus going back out, right? And it's very easy, and this is the challenge, it's very easy to kind of have some experiences and then move into certain levels of understanding where you really have actualized them and you're very comfortable in them and now you're functioning from a different level. And it's real easy to get kind of caught up in that and then kind of stop, to stop pushing yourself as hard, you know, because you've crested that hill. And then the other side of the hill always feels pretty good. Initially, anyway. Right, Linda? Until the next big hill presents itself. But, you know, for that time, it is almost too easy to just kind of get lazy. And lazy is your enemy, certainly, when it comes to your spiritual work. You can't, if your desire is freedom and all that entails, you know, if your desire is truth, which equates to freedom, then you are the one solely responsible for whether you actualize freedom or it remains something out there that you want to attain. It's all in your hands, you know. And I was saying to the group earlier, you as God in form, it's not like you don't have what it takes to wake up. I mean, really, look at it from just the most basic of levels. You know, yes, okay, you, God, in manifest form, densified, right? Densified because it's polarized, but still God. Maybe, you know, God with amnesia, but still God. And even God with amnesia is still God, right? So where are you missing it? There's nothing in you that's not capable of doing what's required to wake up, right? It just comes down to, how bad do you want it? How bad do you want it? And that really is what it comes down to. Yeah. Are you willing to give everything for it? Or where's your cutoff point? You know, I'm willing to go this far, but if you ask that next thing of me, I'm not willing to do that. I worked with a student very recently who was literally seeing part of the patterning. It was so very strong. And this part of the patterning has, even though the student has done a lot of very deep work for quite some time, the patterning was still dictating that this person hold this bitterness and these grudges against people that the person felt had wronged him in the past. And my point to him was, you know, you gotta let it go. There is no walking off the life-death cycle. And if that's too scary a thought for you, let's just say there is no peace, no actualization of peace if you're going to remain bitter. And it was really amazing because in it, he was very honest, which I will give him credit for. Because, of course, he says, you know, I know what you want me to say. And I know what the quote unquote right answer is here that I need to do. He says, but I honestly could say from where I'm sitting right now, I don't know that I want to. And so I was like, okay, so let's look at that. Like, why not? Why not? To really be able to look from a very honest place at your actions, right? And to recognize that not only have you withheld yourself from people around you, but you've withheld yourself from yourself, right? And then beyond that, you've literally hurt people by your actions. To see that and to still be able to witness the power behind the thing that says, I'm not ready to let it go, is testament to how strong the mind is, how strong identification is. Because what it did in this particular student is, rather than allow the student to move into the shame that's actually sitting there, the pain, right? Because the bottom line is, you know, you are love. And so when you experience yourself as outside of that, it's painful. It can't not be. You know, if love is the experience of joy, the actualization of joy, well, then if you're not functioning from that space, then you're going to bring the opposite to you. So it would be painful. And in even in recognizing, you know, oh my God, like for years, I took action that purposefully, even if it was relatively unconscious, it was still purposeful. And it purposefully led to a particular person's pain. And I can see it and not feel bad about it. And take on the attitude of kind of like, oh, well. Like, oh, well, what are you going to do about it? And I had to bring that to him. You know, what is that attitude? What is the attitude when you go, yeah, whatever. Yeah, it doesn't matter, you know. And when we get into that space, what is it really showing us, right? And whenever you get into that space where you try to brush something off as if it doesn't matter to you, it's proof positive that it does matter to you. It matters very, very much to you, and it's painful. And rather than allow the pain to be present, we have to try to deny it and repress it and come forward with a false attitude that says, it doesn't really matter. You know, it's a vast amount of denial sitting right there. And how powerful that identification with the story is, that even in seeing it, right, it's presented right to you. And through a line of questioning, you were the one who brought it forward to see what you've done. And then the story is so strong that it goes, you know, I don't think I want to let go of it. So what's it saying? I like my pain. I like the fact that I hurt others. That's what it's saying. You know, and in the sense of the ego does like the fact that it hurts others. Ooh, people say, I don't think I like that little piece of teaching. But really look at it. There's a sense of satisfaction that comes from hurting other people when it's happening through the space of the ego, because the ego will hold that they deserve it. You know, the sarcasm that's so predominant in the Northeast is testament to that. Sarcasm comes from the need to make others feel less than. Every time you cut somebody down and you try to pass it off as a joke, you're trying to hurt them. You're trying to hurt them. You understand? Look at it objectively. It's not funny. It doesn't matter if you were raised to think it's funny. I've watched this, especially with children. Children being around adults and adults joking the way they're used to joking from that teasing kind of place. And you watch it in a child, that the child experiences pain and they don't know what to do with it. I used to, I have to throw my husband under the bus on this one. But I remember witnessing this with him. He was raised in his family. Teasing is a really big deal, you know, and teasing is a sign of love, right? So the way he was raised, that's what they all believe. You tease the people you love. You don't tease people that you don't care about. Okay, so that sets up a whole thing. Okay, so from his where he sat, well, of course, his children are going to be fodder for the teasing because he adores his children, right? Loves his children more than anything in the world. So I would watch, there was one thing in particular that he would do from time to time with my kids, that they would, all of my kids were very, very loving children, you know, and they always knew, you know, if they ask for a hug, I will always give it to them. It doesn't matter if mommy's angry, mommy's not angry, whatever happened, it doesn't matter. You ask me for a hug and you're going to get it, and you're going to get a real hug, you know. And so they would every now and again go to my husband, can I have a hug? And he'd go, no. And then you'd see that moment of them frozen. you know, the shock, the confusion, the what the heck just happened? Why is he saying no? And of course, followed by, what did I do wrong? Yeah. And then, you know, a few seconds later, he goes, nah, I'm just teasing. Come here. And then he gives him a hug. Well, look what it did to the kid, right? So if you know anything about how the mind works and how patterning runs, you just watched that child move through a full downward spiral, right? Oh, I mean, way down. Until what? Daddy came in as savior. So daddy was the perpetrator first, and then he came in as savior to make it better. But you watch them move through what it is to be victimized. Boom. And there it is, you know. And in my husband's innocence, he had no understanding that this is what is going on. You know, no understanding at all. And will they grow up to do the same thing? Well, of course. They're taught to. Yeah. So will they move through their worlds when they're older doing the teasing thing, and when so they're around someone who wasn't brought up in that space where they got teased, and now they're teasing them and they're hurting them. Now they have to train that other person. That, oh, no, it's a sign of love. I love you. And I show it to you every time I hurt you. Right? You see how twisted it is? Right? And so innocent, so very innocent. Of course, there was no intention on my husband's part to, you know, hurt my children. Of course not. But it doesn't mean it wasn't happening, because it was. And I had to point it out. You realize every time you do that, you hurt them? And of course, that's shocking. What do you mean? Well, because you're denying them. And they're coming to you with a completely open heart, right? And you're shutting them down. And it doesn't matter that it's only for a second or two. The fact is, it happened. Boom. You can't get rid of it once it's imprinted. There it is, you know. You can't get rid of it. Just like psychologists will tell you that, you know, the power of the word no is so much stronger than the power of the word yes. So for every yes you give a child, you know, it takes, excuse me, for every no you give a child, it takes so many yeses to kind of balance the no. That's why, you know, because from the space of the fallen state, the natural tendency is to identify with the no, not with the yes. And even with children who are raised in a space where the yes is natural. And even the no comes with a very clear understanding of why it's a no. It doesn't take much no before the child, you know, really latches onto that and that becomes their story. It doesn't take much at all. It's pretty much inevitable in the world the way the world is. So I bring this to you to give you an opportunity to look and say, like, where in your life are you the source of pain for other people? Where in your life are you, you know, perpetrating that, even if you can say it's unintentional, but you can be honest enough and go, oh, I am doing that. And maybe it is intentional. And if it's intentional, why? Why do you want to be that person? You know, why is it so hard for humanity as a whole to turn the other cheek? Yeah, it's one of the beautiful teachings of Yeshua. Turn the other cheek. You know, if you're not identified with the story, what's it matter? Yeah, what's it matter? It's just, it's the identification with whatever story that says that I have something to prove, so I have to hit back. Or I have something to prove, so I have to confront, or I have to whatever, you know. But from a place of complete non-attachment, it doesn't matter, does it? Not at all. Now here's the caveat. I have to be careful when I'm talking to groups of people because everyone's functioning from very different levels. The caveat is that you don't just wake up one day not attached. Wouldn't it be nice, you know? You wake up the Buddha. Right? if you think you're experiencing that, most likely you're in a very strong state of denial and delusion. Right? I've seen that too. I've watched students get delusional and think they're in exalted states of awareness when they're not, because they're in such pain they can't face it. It's powerful. The mind is so powerful. And the reality of the spiritual path, it's your life, first of all. Okay, so the reality of your life as your spiritual path, whether you believe in all this mumbo jumbo that I tout or not, you're walking it, right? Whether you think you're on a spiritual path or not, you are, because there's nothing outside of it. Everything is spirit. Therefore, everything is spiritual, and you walk your spiritual path every day in all the choices that you make and where you function from. That's it. That's your initiation. You don't have to sign up for anything special. You're in it. Humanity is in a mass initiation collectively, and you are also in your own level of initiation in your world and where you function from. So you would be very wise to start paying close attention to where you're functioning from. Very wise. You have the opportunity for purification every day. The question is, how bad do you want it? Do you want it bad enough to be willing to have to let go of the attachments that you hold? Oh, I don't know. That's awful hard. And it is, and I'm not going to deny that. On the level of the personal self, that seems like an impossibility. It's like, I had a woman here one time. She came to satsang. I don't think she ever came back. We get a lot of that. She came in and something came up, and I was talking to the group about attachment, and something came up around children. And she just could not get past the whole, like, you're telling me, all she could view it, from her lens, all she could take from what I was saying is, you're telling me I'm not supposed to love my children, which from where I sit is hysterical. Because what she can't see is that it's the attachment that's actually keeping her from loving her children. And in her world, the attachment is proof that she loves her children. It's so funny. Because if you could just back out of it for a second and see it for what it really is, you'd be like, oh my gosh, how did I miss that one? The attachment itself will keep you from actualizing the love that you are. Because we've had to take fallen consciousness and use all of our labels to slap them on things to make sense of the world. And, part of that is that somewhere along the way, we decided that a sign of love is attachment. I'll never let you go. And women watch a man say that to a woman in the movies, and they're all like, I wish I had that. Do you really? Really? It's so romantic. It's so codependent. Right? It's so possessive. Is that really what you want? Well, no, but the thought behind it's really beautiful. Is it? Really? Start questioning all this stuff that society holds is true, because it really needs to be questioned. What is love? And are you actually functioning from love in your world? Or are you functioning from a level of fear and attachment that you've labeled love? If you truly love, it means you're completely vulnerable. Is that true of you? All of you listening today, tomorrow, next year, whenever you happen to hear this, are you completely vulnerable in your relationships? Or do you withhold yourself just a little bit for protection? And if you recognize that in yourself right now, honey, you're not living from the space of love. You're not. because love is completely open. No holds barred, no attachment, nothing to hide. You know, complete love doesn't have to cling to anything, but it will love completely. Like a puppy dog, you know. You see a puppy dog with its owner and it just runs up like, oh, can't get enough. Right? And what can you do to a dog? You know, a dog could get kicked and it could experience pain that was inflicted by the owner that it loves and it'll run right back. Small children will do the same exact thing. Because they don't register the infliction of the pain right away. And so they run back, still open, right? That's the heart. That's the heart. How willing are you to be in that space with your partner or your kids or your friends? Or your boss? Or do you always have to kind of, you know, keep that persona in place to protect you? Because, you know, one of my students was saying to me this week, he remembered being little and, you know, little kids being little kids. I think it was he made a deal to swap a lunch item with another kid. And so he gave the kid his thing and the kid ate it. And then he said, okay, so where's my cookie, whatever it was? And the kid said, huh, you got snookered. And he was like, what do you mean? You know, can you see it? Shock, confusion. What just happened? I don't get it. And the kid was like, you know, kind of proving his point that you got taken. So what does that impress upon this child now? I can't be open. I can't trust. Because when you trust, bad things happen. And what I'm telling you is when you don't trust, that's when bad things happen. And you're going to go, but you're wrong. Because, wow, I'm going to show you a million and one examples of how bad things happened when I trusted. And I'm going to say, you know what? That may be your memory, but you're not seeing clearly. Because the only reason it hurt was because you were identified with the story. And you were attached to the outcome. And you just can't see it objectively. But when you see it objectively, it's not true. And the mind goes, oh, I think this one's worth fighting for. We're going to really work hard to fight for this one. Let's hold this in place. Let's not let go of that. It's hard. I had my own experience of that being young. I think I was in like fifth grade, and I was always a very open-hearted kid, very trusting kid. It's really interesting because I was like really bossy as a little kid. You can't see that, right? I was like super bossy, but I trusted people completely. And we had this, I had this girlfriend who was going to have some friends over. And so she was, you know, it was the 70s. So she had this disco light thing. The thing in the middle turned around a light and it had different colors on it. And it made all these things go on the walls. And she wanted to borrow it for her little party. And I was like, yeah. And so, you know, I didn't think twice about the fact that I wasn't invited to the party. I just kind of gave it to her and let her do it. But then when, after like a week or 2 weeks, like she hadn't brought it to me, like back to school. And then I remember saying something to her about it. And, you know, honestly, I can't remember now if she, I think she damaged it. I think maybe it was one of those plastic things. I think it hit the light bulb and it melted, you know, like that kind of thing. And I was like upset over the fact that, well, she was trying to hide it. Of course, I'm sure she felt very guilty. But that she didn't say anything to me. And then, you know, here I'd given it to her and now it was ruined. She wasn't going to buy me a new one or whatever. And I think it was my mother. And if it wasn't, you know, sorry, but, I think it was my mother. I kind of brought it to her that I was upset. And she said, you know, you're too trusting. And I remember in the moment being like, what do you mean? Like, is there another option? You know, like I didn't get it. What do you mean? How can you be too trusting? Like, because in my natural state, I trusted everyone. Why wouldn't I? You know, why wouldn't I? Because everyone's trustworthy. But that made an imprint. It made an impact, certainly. You're too trusting. You can't trust people like that because they will let you down or they will hurt you or whatever. And I remember on a very conscious level being like, okay, like I have to work to be less trusting and I'm going to do it. I mean, look at the impact that has on someone. And my mother, in her defense, was doing what in her world was the right thing to do by her child, you know, protecting me from future hurt. But the reality of it is that down the road, I had to unravel all of it. Recognize that I wasn't trusting and let it all go and move back to that space where that's my natural tendency is just to trust, you know. And if you prove to me that you're not trustworthy, well, now I can decide what I'm going to do with that, right? Now I can decide if next time I want to give you the benefit of the doubt or not. But the reality is when you're not attached, you're really not attached to that part either. If I give you the benefit of the doubt, I give you choice. I don't take it away from you. I give you choice. What are you going to do with it? And you can choose to take advantage of me again, or you can choose to make the right choice, you know? And in that case, hey, good for you. Forward movement. Right? And I can decide that for myself. But see, from a place of non-attachment, it doesn't matter. Oh, they took advantage of me again. There it is. But I went in willingly. I went in with open eyes, right? It's not something you're going to hold against somebody. They did what they were capable of doing. Why, you know, what are you going to do? Give them another opportunity down the road. Maybe not right away. Does this all sound absolutely crazy to those of you listening who have, you know, the experience of the world behind you, where you witness how hurtful and hateful everybody is? Well, you know, they're only hurtful and hateful because that's what they were taught to do. And, you know, deep inside, they all want the same thing you do. They want to be loved and appreciated and heard, you know. That's what you want. So why don't you just go out into the world tomorrow and start looking at everybody through that lens? They want the same thing I want. Ultimately, we're all really on the same side here. We all want the same things. Why do I have to make them wrong for me to be right? It doesn't even matter. Can there be more than one right? Based on your vantage point. Ooh, scary. Scary. To open up to that one. Ooh, can there be more than one right? Could we look at the political system that way and say maybe both sides are right? No. Because they're definitely wrong. Really? On everything? I don't know. Does it depend on where you're viewing it from? Can you not at least give them that? That if I stood in your shoes and if I had the upbringing you had and if I had the life experience you had, that I would view the world the way you do? Because you know what? That's the reality of it. And from, you know, it was interesting. I was thinking about like the family that I was raised in, thinking back to times where I witnessed things come out of my father, especially my father's mouth, where there was judgment built into it. And I remember even being smaller and just being like, I don't get it. I don't get it. Why are you passing judgment when the reality is that if you had been born, you know, you aren't the one who was in control of being born where you were born, you know? and being raised by the people you were raised by. Like, you could have been born anywhere. So why do you think you're, like, the way it comes off is that you think you're better than that person? Do you think that they, you know, that person would have chosen to be born in that situation? Really? And you're going to look down on them because of their birth? Like, that's just crazy. Right? It is. It's crazy how easy it is to be self-righteous and to pass judgment on others when you have no understanding of what's really going on. You don't know their karma. You know, you don't know what they've been through. You don't know what they're going to go through. Shoot, you don't know that about yourself. How on earth could you know it about someone else? But how easy it is to pass judgment and to hold ourselves above others. And how easy it is to pass judgment on ourselves and hold ourselves as less than others. Equally easy. You know, and it's two sides of the same coin. So the one who's self-righteous and who judges outwardly, right? They do it because they're running from their pain. And the one who sits in the space where they judge themselves, it's the self-righteous one before they became self-righteous. That's all it is. Because they're willing to feel the pain. And then they just get stuck in their pain. Opposed to the person who knew the feeling of getting stuck in the pain. And then out of that came self-righteousness, which would swing them out of feeling the pain. But it comes from pain, you see. It is two sides of the same coin. You really can't differentiate between them. Just one has taken on the skill of being able to swing itself out. The other one doesn't have that skill set. But that's the only difference. They're both in pain. So if you're someone who goes around the world judging other people, you know, you're in pain, darling. You just don't want to look at it. And for the person who just sits and judges themselves, you're in a kind of a sick and twisted kind of way. You're enjoying your pain too much. It's time to, from a healthy place, release some of that pain, you know, because it's not serving you just to hold on to it. It doesn't serve you to run from it, and it doesn't serve you to hold on to it either. You know, there is a healthy balance between the two. Look at it. See what's there to be learned from it and then move past it. See, that's the balance. Don't be in denial of it. Find it, right? And then get in there and allow it to be. But don't get stuck in it. Find the lesson. Find the thing that is there for your growth and then take it. Apply it. Do something with it. And watch yourself walk out of the pain. And then once you've walked out, you never have to walk back in again. And, you know, everyone kind of gets stuck in there. It's very seductive, the whole pain thing, you know. Ego loves it. It just loves it. For as much as it doesn't think it loves it and tries to run from it, it really does. I mean, look at the example I gave earlier of the student who said, you know, I don't think I want to let go. Why? Because I like my pain. I like being miserable. Thank you very much. It's like, but you came to me. You came to me and said you wanted truth. And the truth is that you aren't miserable. I hate to break it to you. But the truth is you aren't, and you never were. Mm. So now how bad do you want the truth? Right? And the really cool thing was that he was capable of witnessing energetically what his body was in the middle of when I was bringing all of it to him. His body was like revolted by what I was saying, you know. And energetically, he felt it. It was like shaking, like, no. Get that away from me. No. And I'm like, that's great. That's great. You're looking at it. The ego in action. You're looking at it. That's awesome. Now do something with it. Trust me, right? Trust me that I can see what you can't. And you came to me asking to see truth, and I'm pointing you in the direction right now. Now you just have to trust me, and you got to walk it. Witness the energy, witness the resistance, witness all of it, but keep walking. You know, keep walking, even if they're little steps, little geisha steps. Keep walking. You know? And for all of you out there who are in the middle of painful life circumstances, you know, on one level, you have to accept the fact that the only reason you're walking through them is because it's presenting something to you that you've been in denial over. Okay, that's the first lesson. Doesn't matter what it is. And you can argue with me all you want, but it doesn't make it not true. Because it's true. If you're in the middle of a difficult life circumstance, it's come to you because it has had to come to you, because you've been given opportunities to look at whatever it is that's stuck, and you've been given opportunities to act from different places, and you have chosen not to. So now it has to come in such a way that you can't deny it anymore, and you have to deal with it. So good, right? Don't get all down on yourself that you have to deal with it and get yourself into a funk over it. Deal with it. Meet it head on, you know? Be the spiritual warrior that you came here to be. Meet it head on. Take no prisoners. Okay, so you get that piece in. You're in a really good place. Now, you've got to be willing to be honest and objective about what's going on, okay? So start looking at where you're creating more story around the story, where you're creating story that isn't really part of the story, but it fits your story, and so you're working really hard to maintain it. You got to be willing to see that and own it. Take responsibility for your part in it. You know, you're like the little kid who just got his caught with his hand in the cookie jar. You can't look at your mother and say, I didn't do it, because your hand is still in it. Or you can't look at your mom and say, I didn't mean to. It was an accident. And mom goes, really now? That was an accident. I fell into the cookie jar. But the personal self is like that. It tries to get away with all kinds of crazy things. Okay. Own it, people. Own it. There's no moving through it. There's no dissolving it. There's no kind of conquering it or whatever terminology you want to use until you own it first. Own your shortcomings. Own the places in your life where, you know, you've been a putz. Own it. Stop judging yourself for it. Get objective. Look at it clearly. See where your choices were off. See where your choices were really dictated by your fear. Where your choices were dictated by your attachments. And of course, if you're in attachment, it's because you're in fear. Why does a parent get nervous when their kid gets on a school bus? I remember being around parents who were so nervous every day when their kids got on the school bus. And it just floored me. I mean, you could see the stress. Oh, because I don't know what's going to happen. No, of course you don't know what's going to happen. But why on earth are you thinking the worst? How does it serve you every day when Johnny gets on the bus to think that something horrible is going to happen? Right? Oh my God, what if something happens? Well, if something happens, then you deal with it when it happens. But what on earth does that have to do with what's happening right now? Nothing. And how is you lending your negative energy to the situation helping anybody? It's not, right? Be here now. Like, stop. Y'all sit in this space where you expect the worst out of people. You expect the worst out of life. And part of it is really because, you know you're worthy kind of expecting the worst out of yourself. That's the reason we project it out on others. Because we've been the takers, and we've been the ones who hurt other people and put them into painful situations and take advantage. And we've done all of it, right? But we don't want to look at ourselves and say, yeah, I'm a taker. I'm a user. Like, we don't want to do that. So we hide it, and we get really good at doing it. And then we find it in other people, and it repulses us. And then we bash them for doing it. Time to get honest. Just get honest, you know? It's so easy to do when you can detach yourself from the emotion of the story. You know, you can get honest. And when you get honest and you start to see it, now allow it to be personal again and get back in there and feel the pain. That's cool. Feel the pain and walk through it, you know? Feel the pain you put on other people. Let it break your heart, because it should, you know? Because moving through the place where it breaks your heart, something shifts there. And then you move into a spot where you're far less likely to ever do it again. You're far less likely to ever perpetrate that on another person again when you've felt their pain. It's beautiful. Own it and release it. Don't hang on to it. It's not going to serve you. You don't have to feel guilty forever. Just let it go. Yeah? It's all heading to this most beautiful space. It does exist in the space where there is no fear and there is no attachment. It's your divine you, and it is blissful and gorgeous and so peaceful, and it is attainable, and every single one of you is capable of doing it. God knows you wouldn't be listening to my voice if that wasn't true, because I am not your average teacher out there. Keep listening. Keep doing what I'm telling you to do. Pay attention in your life. Be the observer. Apply what I'm giving you and watch the shifting take place, because I promise you it will. Okay. It has been my deepest honor to be with you again tonight. We're going to go into meditation. Beautiful song. I hope you enjoy it. And we'll see you again next week for satsang. Thank you so much. Good night.